it was such a great experience. I actually emailed the buyer afterwards and was like, dude, like, I just want to let you know that I really appreciate this, because somebody along the way from your team said, do not set this, you know, send an agreement off to Jack, Nitz, and Taryn that's just lopsided. Like, make this a middle of the road agreement from day one. Like, that was clearly someone communicated that, because otherwise I think it would have been the other way.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
The people that own the Pork Belly contracts are going batshit. They're thinking, hey, we're losing all our damn money, and Christmas is around the corner, and I ain't got no money to buy my son the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Mike Nunez. Yes, Mike, if you're listening to this podcast, congratulations for sending in the right answer to the movie quote. And which one was it? That was a Boiler Room, right?
I think so. You expect me to remember? I don't know. We need Chris Moore, our content director, on here. Come on, Chris.
Hey, Chris, we need your show notes for before we actually record these. But I do know that, Mike, you sent in a correct answer. Thank you for doing that. I don't know what the prize is, other than next time I see you, I'll buy you a drink for sending that in and getting the right answer.
For people that don't know, why don't we tell who Mike Nunez is?
Yeah, Mike Nunez is an old friend of Quiet Light Brokerage. He's also a buyer with Quiet Light Brokerage. And what are you getting at, Joe? What am I missing?
Doesn't he run affiliatemanager.com?
He does run affiliatemanager.com.
He's huge in the affiliate space. So if there's anybody out there with products that are looking for a great affiliate company to connect with, look up Mike Nunez on LinkedIn and connect with him. He's one of the nicest guys in the country, and you'll love working with him and his company.
You know what this movie quote is going to become, right? All of the show vendors, all of the other vendors out there that want us to make a pitch on the podcast are going to start sending in the right answers to us here on out. So those of you listening, whatever the movie quote was, send us an email and let us know what that's from. We'll give you a shout out on the podcast. But now let's talk a little bit about today's podcast episode, because I'm excited about this. I love the actual stories of selling somebody's business. Joe, you've been working with Mike Jackness on colorit.com, getting his business sold. And today we're continuing the story. We already had one podcast on this where we talked about getting the offer, preparing the business for sale, going through all that. And now we're looking at the other side of it, and that is preparing for the close and doing that due diligence and some of that stuff that gets pretty difficult towards the end of a sale.
Yeah. The first podcast was right up until the letter of intent. And now we're talking honestly and openly about the process that we had to go through, that Mike really had to go through with his team, from the moment you're under letter of intent all the way through the due diligence, that financial prostate exam, if you will, negotiating the asset purchase agreement, meeting the buyers face to face, working with transitioning your virtual assistants over to them, closing and training and transition after. We go through all of it. Nothing is left out. Mike is honest and humbled and surprised in some cases. Don't mean to plug people, but Centurica did the due diligence, and Mike, we'll let people listen to it, but Mike made a promise to Brian at Centurica. He said something about this process and his accounting and how it's going to work out. And Brian said, yeah, okay, we'll see. And Mike was a little humbled and surprised in the process.
Well, that's great. Well, Mike is a good guy. We've plugged him before. He's been on our podcast now a few times. Let's get over to this, because I think anyone that is thinking about selling, or even if you're a buyer and you're going through this process, it's so useful to get that perspective of what it's like to go through this process as a seller. Because, boy, it can be frustrating sometimes. It can be stressful. And just getting into the psyche of what's going on there, I think, is invaluable.
And not to go on too long, but one of the most important things you're going to hear here is what Mark and I say all the time, but you're not going to hear it from us. You're going to hear it from Mike. He's built, he's bought, he's sold, and he's gone through this process most recently as a seller. And there are some things, if he could turn back time, he would absolutely do, and he would have made more money. but he was at a certain emotional state and life state where he wanted to sell. And we made that happen and we achieved his financial goals. But if he could turn back time, that would have changed things a little bit. So we're hoping that the lesson that you'll get out of this is planning your exit eventually. You may wake up one day and decide, okay, today's the day I need to, reach out to Joe or Mark, anybody at Quiet Light, and begin that process. But you've planned well in advance for that. That's part of the mistake that we talk about with Mike. So that's it. Let's go to the podcast.
Hey folks, it's Joe Valley with Quiet Light Brokerage, and we have another great episode of the Quiet Light podcast here with our good friend, Michael Jackness. How are you today, Mike?
Doing good, man.
It's good to have you back. I know that we've been chatting a lot lately because we just closed a transaction together.
We did. It's good to be on the other end of it now.
It is, isn't it? It's been a process. We're recording this, folks, on April 18th, and we started in mid-December. And we ended up closing the transaction on April 5th. So we're going to do a little bit of a recap. This is part two of the process of selling Mike's business, Color It. Mike, so that those that are just tuning in and didn't hear it the first time, why don't you give a 60-second background on yourself so they know who you are?
Yeah, so I always joke that this background story gets longer and longer as I get older. But the short version is that I have a background in IT. I'm an entrepreneur by heart. I was doing affiliate marketing and quit my day job in 2004 and been out on my own doing various things since then. Got into e-commerce in 2012 when we bought Trailmail.com and sold that, had an exit with that in 2015 in January for e-commerce brands, one of which we just sold through you. And we've been blogging and podcasting about that journey since 2015 at Ecom Group.
And you're being a little humble there because you really travel all over the world and speak now, not just with Ecom Crew, but also on your email marketing campaigns that you do with Klaviyo. So I'm gonna boost you up a little bit. All right, let's.
Thank you.
You're famous, man. I'm humbled just having you on the podcast and to call you my friend, I think.
Jeff has this shirt that's like famous on Amazon. I have one that's like famous in my own head.
Famous in my house, but the least famous according to my family. There you go. Yeah. All right. So just a quick recap. Again, we launched Color It for Sale in mid-December against my better judgment, but you're influential and you pushed me and we did it anyway. We try normally to have 3 to 5 conference calls in the first 30 to 45 days and at least one acceptable offer. We had 3 or 4. We can't remember. We talked about this the other day and I didn't bother looking it up, but we had enough so that we got 2 offers. We ended up under LOI on February 5th, intentionally chose not to close for 60 days so you could move 3 of the brands out of the seller account into other seller accounts. And that was a fun process, right?
Oh, yeah. Lovely. Yeah,
joy. And then we ended up closing on April 5th, roughly 60 days later after going under the LOI. So we talked about the process getting to LOI in the previous recording. Let's talk about what happened afterwards and talk about due diligence. How was your experience in due diligence? How painful was it? How good was it? How easy? All that good stuff.
It was a lot less enjoyable than receiving the wire.
Is this a yes or a no that you really worked harder getting the business sold than you did actually operating the business?
Absolutely. Yeah. It was a lot of work. It was stressful just because I kind of strive for perfection and wanted everything to be exactly what we had communicated in the preliminary process. But Centurica is really good and they found stuff that I didn't even know about my own business, which was really frustrating for me. It was a little bit unnerving. I was worried about how that would be perceived, how that would affect the deal. What I realized, I guess, eventually was that every one of these deals, I think, that goes through due diligence, stuff comes up. And we were kind of within that normal boundaries of acceptable tolerances, I guess, or whatever that they would call it. And I probably was making a mountain out of a molehill, but for me, at the moment that it was happening, I was pretty upset.
Yeah, so we had 2 or 3 things that came up where the P&L wasn't exactly right. The discretionary earnings wasn't exactly right for the trailing 12 months. And it's funny, I had a call this morning. I'm working on launching a listing tomorrow. And the owner of that business said, well, what happens in due diligence if, that happens? And he was worried that the whole deal would just fall apart and you start from scratch. That's not normally the case. Normally, you just use logic and math and say, okay, if you're off by $1,000 in your Multiple is a three time you take $3,000 off the contract price of the business. That's really important when you build that trust that you've built over the last 2 or 3 months with the buyers of your business, Mike. But in your case, we didn't make any adjustment at all, even though your numbers were not exactly the same as in discretionary earnings, right?
Yeah. I think a few things kind of happened there. Number one, as we were going through due diligence and working towards closing, our January numbers came out, then our February numbers came out, and eventually we kind of knew what March was looking like, and we were up significantly year over year. So, I mean, it was getting to be to a point where, in some respects, I was kind of hoping the deal would fall apart just so I could relist it for more money.
Yeah.
Obviously, that wasn't what I wanted to happen because I didn't want to have to go through everything again, but that certainly probably helped. And I think that, a level of trust kind of was established, like you said, that they knew that there was nothing nefarious going on there. Or at least I hope that that's what they were thinking. I'm sure that that's what they were thinking, obviously. And I also think that just based on talking to Brian over at Centurica, like after the whole thing was done, it was basically like, when the report comes out, it's always going to be, there's always something that's kind of found. And it just, it's kind of like a home inspection. When you go buy a home, there's going to be a home inspection and there's always going to be stuff that guy finds. Some of the stuff you can try and negotiate for to lower the price of the home, but a lot of it you just accept. It's just like there's things that you're going to just be like, okay, well, I didn't know that when I signed the agreement to buy this house and put it in escrow, but I want to buy the house nonetheless. And here I am, and I'm going to just go ahead and still do it. So, I think all those things combined, and I legitimately was willing to walk away. I wasn't willing to sell it for less, as I feel like the number that we picked was about, in my mind, was the least I was willing to sell the business for. We had talked about willing to because we had already started separating our companies and making things better, that if we waited another year, we would have gotten more money for it. But at the same time, I also had set my mind on it to sell it. So, there was a bunch of things going on there, but luckily it all kind of worked out in the end.
Yeah, you were emotionally ready to sell. There's no question about it. I talked to you three times about waiting, separating them all out, wait another year or so, and you definitely were ready.
It wasn't about the money. It was more just a lifestyle adjustment and realizing we had too much going on and, leaving some money on the table for this transaction to almost certainly put us in a better situation moving forward. So, all in, I think we're going to do much better by selling one of these businesses.
Yeah. And you're going to be able to narrow your focus with the sale. Yeah. So regards to Centurica, for those that are considering using them or are fearful that you're under LOI and your buyer's hiring Centurica, I've never had a deal go sideways with Centurica. What they do is they find out, like Mike said, what the issues are with the business and really what it is. It's a little scary, but it for the buyer of the business, it's really things that can be fixed and it's a path towards, future growth and making the business stronger. So I like it when somebody else steps in on buyer's behalf and really digs into those numbers. It helps the process and instills confidence in everybody that it is a good investment and that nothing's going to come, back to you, Mike, in this situation after the sale. If, you closed and the buyer found something after the fact, it's better that they find it during due diligence like we did here.
Yeah. And I think the only reason you would really need to be fearful is if you are hiding something and you know it and these guys will find it. I can promise you, they're incredible. And if I ever go buy a business, I will absolutely hire them. They are incredible. I almost want to hire them just to have them come do an audit on our existing business just to make sure everything gets fixed before we go sell it another piece of it a year or two from now. They're really good.
It's not a crazy idea. Preparing in advance for the sale of a business 12 to 18 months out, now that is critical. We talked about it recently. You got a good value for Colorit, but I think realistically, if the brands had all been separated out and you had clean tax returns, staff that was delegated just towards color, it's possible you would have gotten a higher multiple. And, with your January and February growth numbers and December was just killer, there's no doubt that the buyer of your business is really excited and didn't even think about making an adjustment because some of the numbers were off by a little bit because, the numbers were so high for January and February. He knew that he was getting a great business. And he told me personally that he thought that this one is probably the best of the three Amazon FBA businesses that he's bought for me in the last 8 months. So we got through due diligence. It was a little painful, a little tough. Centurica helped. We had some trust built early on, so we didn't make any adjustments. And mostly because of that trust and because of you keeping your gas, foot on the gas in terms of the numbers and the growth of the business. The worst thing you can do, folks, is once you're under LOI, have a bad month or two during due diligence. It scares the buyer. They're making a lifetime investment, putting their life savings on the line, and they want to see positive numbers, not negative numbers. So we got through it. And the next phase, sort of when we got most of the way through it, was to, you know, end up drafting, editing, and signing a 30 to 45 page asset purchase agreement. And that can be kind of scary and overwhelming in itself. But this situation was pretty smooth, don't you think, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. I expected it to go one way. It's actually funny. I expected the due diligence to go one way, and it kind of went a different way, because I was quoting to Centurica when I did the kickoff call that this would be the most accurate. I forgot exactly how I said it, but I really threw myself under the bus. This will be the most accurate company you've ever gone through due diligence with. You're not going to find anything off even by a penny. And he was like, yeah, we'll see about that. that went one way. And then the legal questions in my career, and the ones where the other party drafts the agreements, are usually just an awful experience of their lawyer is drafting the agreement on behalf of their clients and all the things that they would want in a perfect world for their client, with complete disregard to what the other party would want to see in that agreement, knowing exactly what they want. You know, they already know what the third party is going to want, but they don't care about that. They hope that, you know, of the 100 things that are in there, you only ask to change 50 or something, and the other 50 stay in the other party's, you know, best interest. So what I got was an agreement. And so I'm not a lawyer, and I've been through these a million times, and I don't get emotional about this stuff. I just sent it immediately off to my attorney. I was like, let me know. And I was expecting pages of stuff that were going to be really difficult to go back and forth on. And I really hate this part of the negotiation process, because you've already signed the deal, and now you're negotiating over a bunch of other points that you weren't expecting to have to fight over. And there was none of that. Like, she's just like, make sure you fill in the blank for this number. And you know, they haven't created this LLC yet that they're talking about in the agreement yet. Make sure that that's done, so it's actually a legal entity before you sign. And I mean, it was little piddly stuff like that. There was a couple small things that had some substance, but I mean, it made me so happy, like, not to have to go through a tough process. It kept our legal fees down. We ended up only spending like $2,500 reviewing and editing the APA, which I was expecting 10 or 20K just from previous experience of having to go back and forth. And it was such a great experience. I actually emailed the buyer afterwards and was like, dude, like, I just want to let you know that I really appreciate this, because somebody along the way from your team said, do not set this, you know, send an agreement off to Jack, Nitz, and Taryn that's just lopsided. Like, make this a middle of the road agreement from day one. Like, that was clearly someone communicated that, because otherwise I think it would have been the other way.
Yeah, this is the fourth transaction I've done with Matt and his attorneys. First one years ago, and the last three within the last 8 months. And every one of those contracts have been fair and balanced and turned around very quickly. And we actually have an attorney referral list now, where we just want people to have good attorneys, because we've had situations where people have awful attorneys. Yeah. So we started gathering a list, and we've put this firm, Jones and Spross, on there. If anybody is working on an asset purchase agreement, doing it directly with another buyer or seller, and you want a referral to an attorney, shoot me an email, joe@quietlightbrokerage.com, and I'll be happy to send it off to you. Happy to do that. So that's good. We got through that APA, and we actually signed it. It's interesting, because we signed it on the 14th of March, and normally when we sign it, money goes into escrow and then we're right off to closing. But in this case, we waited almost another 3 weeks. So it could have been even longer.
They did put money in escrow, if you don't, you might not recall, but like, there was like a $25,000 deposit. Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the request, actually it was necessary, because you moving things out of the seller account, there was I think it was a non-refundable $25,000 earnest money that was put in escrow after signing the asset purchase agreement. I think it was non-refundable, but that went to the attorney escrow agreement, and then the balance was sent in just prior to closing. And it all worked out very well. We ended up closing on March 5th, but prior to that, we had to have some calls and some meetings and doing some planning But there were times when you were a little nervous because there wasn't a whole lot of planning and a whole lot of conversations going on.
Yeah. I mean, it was, from my point of view, like, I wasn't worried about me because, like, I knew the money was going to be there. But I'm the kind of guy, as you know, that, like, I'm looking out for the other guy. They just spent a lot of money. I want to make sure it's a good experience for them. And I was just like, guys, you're buying this business in a couple of days, and we haven't talked about changing passwords and billing, and, you know, things are going to just start breaking if you aren't paying attention to them. And, you know, the team needs a kind of a handoff and to know exactly where to look for things, et cetera. So it was a little bit weird to me that didn't seem to be as they were the kind of guys that, like, everything was like T's crossed, I's dotted, really highly motivated and passionate about, like, everything that they're doing. But that didn't seem to be as big of a concern. And I think we were talking about a little bit, I think it was a combination. They just purchased another business, like, right before that.
Yeah.
I was also coming to visit them for 2 days, like a couple of days after closing, to be with them 2 full days in person, which I think probably they were just mostly waiting for that to happen. And I think the last part is that they just basically trusted me by that point that I was a good guy and wasn't going to rake them over the coals. But there were definitely some moments where I was just like, if I wanted to, like, really screw these guys right now, I could kind of, I was like thinking that, and more just from the perspective of, you know, I think they probably should just be more careful because not everyone's a good person. And I've seen squirrely stuff happen. And
remember, you didn't read every line of the asset purchase agreement. I'm sure whatever the potential screwing was or could have been was covered there. There was probably.
I did not read the agreement. I had my lawyer read it, but yeah, I'm sure there was some legal stuff in there that had I screwed them. I mean, again, there was, like, obviously never a moment where I was actually going to do anything like that. I was just more, I'm worried for them.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest was that, you know, the wire had come in and we still had that loan in the Amazon account. And, you know, who knows? Someone could just, like, catch a flight out of the country and be like, see you later. And it was a little bit scary for me on their behalf. I mean, I just worry about stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that the last minute stuff was due to they had just closed one. So they were busy with that. And they also knew what was coming. And they are so busy. They have so little capacity for anything about what's in front of them that they were like, we'll get to that when it's necessary. And it's necessary just after closing or just after the money's fine. But the other thing that you mentioned was that you went to meet with them in person. You happened to be going on a road trip and were going to be in their neighborhood just after closing. So that worked out perfectly.
Yeah.
I always recommend to people, to buyers in particular, regardless of the size of the transaction, that if you can, if there's any possible way, you get in the car, you get on a plane, and you go visit your seller during due diligence. Once you're under letter of intent, get in front of them. Have lunch with them, have dinner, get a tour. You don't want to let the staff know that the business is for sold for the most part until the APA is signed. But you could go in as a consultant or at the very least meet them so that you can gain that level of trust because it makes a huge difference. The worst situation I've ever had, I actually had a guy from San Diego, where you're from, early on when I first started back in 2012. He bought a business from me that was $35,000. And there was about $40,000 worth of inventory. He flew from San Diego in January to Minnesota, and he didn't have a winter coat. And I was trying to talk to him because I grew up in Maine. I'm like, you don't know what 10 degrees is with a wind chill factor of 20 below? But it worked out. And he said to me later, he said, look, if I hadn't met them in person and learned everything I learned in due diligence, I would have walked away because, you know, due diligence was tough when you've got, you know, a business that's $35,000 and there's $40,000 worth of inventory. But he met them in person and that made the difference. He still owns it today. I saw him at the Prosper Show a few years ago. So it definitely in-person meetings are really, really important. Let's talk now about those 2 days. In most transactions, there's a transition period, a training period that is part of the purchase price. The standard asset purchase agreement says up to 40 hours over the first 90 days after closing. I don't think you're going to use 40 hours or they're going to use 40 hours from you, but you put in a couple of very long days right after closing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that it was required. Like, I mean, not for me to be there or whatever, but I'm, again, the type of guy, I mean, I want to see them have success with this business, bottom line. And part of it's just, you know, treating others like I like to be treated. And I have been in transactions before. I mean, when I bought ice wraps, when the wire hit, the guy ghosted me. It was like, I literally never heard from him again. And I just,
that's why we do holdbacks, people.
Yeah. But I mean, it was a $50,000 purchase. It was actually the exact same situation as going, I went to Minnesota or to Michigan, not Minnesota. It was also in January. I also did not have a winter coat, and I was also coming from San Diego. I thought you were talking about me for a second. But the employees like did help me with the transition, but the owner just was gone.
Yeah.
And there was a couple things that I could have used his help on that would have just taken him 30 seconds to answer. So, you know, again, I just would never want to be that guy. And there's a lot, I mean, a lot of things are going on in our business that I felt like needed a handoff. You realize, like, there's all complicated they are. It seems so easy to you because you learn them one day at a time. And when you're trying to take 5 years of something that you learn one day at a time, that, you know, for me to like send orders into Amazon or, you know, have something come from our 3PL or from China, go to our 3PL, go to Amazon, or deal with a customer service issue or do Facebook ads. I mean, all the different pieces of the business, it all just seems so second nature to me. It's no different than breathing. But when you try to start explaining it to somebody, you realize like just how much there is. And so I actually made a list of like 40 items as I just started thinking of them over and above what they were asking for, of things that I thought that they that I needed to explain to them. And I just, you know, I wanted to feel like when I left there that I felt good about myself, that they had everything everything for me to make sure that they were going to be successful. Now, what they do with things from here on out isn't really, I look at that, that's not my problem. Like, I mean, I've done everything I can. It's up to them now. If they run it into the ground, there's nothing I can really do about that. If they, you know, I'd rather them go make $1 billion with it, I'd be much happier with that result. But I want to feel good about me. Like, I gave them every tool possible to be successful, and I'm still there for them. They still have been contacting me, but they've been really good about it and respectful. You know, I've been spending 10 to 15 minutes a day, maybe, you know, since I left there helping them, which I think is completely reasonable. And, you know, I see the light at the end of the tunnel in that within 2 to 3 weeks, I'll probably never hear from them again, other than to say hi, maybe have a drink someday, because they're really awesome guys. I really like them. And I'd love to hang out with them just on a personal level next time we're in the same city. But they're obviously not going to take advantage. That's when I would get upset, is like if the other party is like taking advantage and like asking you to continue to do stuff and spend 8 hours a day helping them and just taking advantage. And they're not doing that. And again, I just want to make sure that I did the best that I could and I can feel good about myself with the handoff. And that's kind of how things transpired.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, as far as the taking advantage, that's why it's called transition and training. It's not operating the business. Yeah. So we've always, you know, got a certain period, you know, up to and over. The reality is that even after 3 months, they may send you a note, a Skype message, a text, an email with a quick question that you're going to respond to. It happened to me when I was in my business. Yeah. There's just no way you can pack everything that's in your head inside of a 2-day training period, because they're going to come up against something that, you know, may not happen for 4 months, and it's new to them and it wasn't covered in training. It's just the nature of all of the pieces and parts. But at the same time, it's not overly complicated. These businesses are fairly easy to transfer, and the training is fairly easy. It's just, you know, it's running on its own now. And it's the key thing that I always tell people is, especially people that are leaving the corporate world and are used to working 60 hours a week, and they take over a business like yours that might take 15 hours a week on the high side, that just, you know, put in 30, but 15 working and 15 observing and training, and don't fix anything that's not broken. I see that happen too often. People come from the corporate world and they're fixers. They want to fix things not broken, so they do break it. So that's the big piece that I try to have them not do, which is really important. Okay, so we're doing video here. Most people listen to audio, but you've got the Ecom Crew shirt on, so I want to talk about that a little bit. I want to know, you know, we've closed, the money's in the bank, you've gotten one of four brands, so you've got a little bit more free time. Not a lot. I know you're crazy busy, but what's next for Mike Jackness?
Well, immediately following this, reason I have the Ecom Crew shirt on is because we're doing an Ecom Crew webinar right after this. So that's what's immediately next. But I think you're talking bigger picture. I mean, I'm trying to get, I have some life goals. I do a podcast every year about yearly goals and a couple of big themes are less is more. You know, I think that we've just been trying to do too much. We've been successful in spite of ourselves, in spite of like running at full steam. I'm concerned about burning out because I've been there before and I can kind of feel that coming to a certain extent. So before you're running off the rails and just feeling like I'm completely burned out, I wanted to make some changes. And one of those things was selling one of those businesses to make sure that the burnout thing doesn't happen. But in overall, like the thing that I really enjoy doing is the teaching and education part with Econ Crew. It's been awesome. Like I talk about how I feel like I have enough in life. I mean, it's always nice to make more money. I'm not going to, be one of those guys that's like, I'm not going to take any money when I have an opportunity to make money. But there's different ways to make money. And one of the things that's been really cool is to just to help others while doing that. And, it might be a situation where I might make $10,000 instead of $20,000, but somebody else might make $100,000. So it's like a net win for the world. And it's still good for me. And it's done in an environment where I get way more enjoyment out of it. And it's a lot better than coming to the office every day and just kind of grinding, which is not really for me. You know, there's a reason why I left my day job in 2004. So, just those are kind of some big picture things that we're working on. I also want to get into an e-commerce business that I have just a personal interest in. I think that that's really important after just being in e-commerce and business stuff over a long period of time. The things that you are personally interested and passionate about are just way easier. And Coloring was an amazing business, an amazing brand for a whole bunch of reasons that we don't have time to get into here. But it's just not something that I'm personally into. And the same thing with Ice Wraps and Tac Niner and Wild Baby. These are just things that they make money. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. I think a really good business person at heart. Like I am very scrappy. I will figure out a way to make money doing just about anything, but it's not just about that. It's doing something that I actually have an interest in and enjoy, which I think will be a lot better. So those are some big picture things for me.
And I think a lot of that, strangely enough, comes with age and experience. Hustled in the past and you did what you had to do and you got ahead and you're giving back. For those that have not listened to Econ Crew, the podcast, I highly advise it. We talk about it often here on the podcast. For people that have just purchased businesses or even those that have them and are trying to expand their channels either to Amazon or email marketing or anything like that, you got to tune in, listen to Mike and Dave on Econ Crew. They've got a great series, Under the Hood. We're going to try to do something like that on valuations here at Quiet Light someday. But Mike is one of those guys that has been there, done it, and now he's helping. He's not teaching because he had nothing else to do. He's teaching because he's been very, very successful in sharing his experience with others. So I appreciate that. Mike, any last thoughts, any last words in terms of what you'd say to people that are thinking about selling in the future and how to prepare?
Yeah, I mean, specifically on thinking about selling, how to prepare, the first thing I would say is that everything comes to an end at some point, right? So even if you're like, I'm never going to sell my business, that's complete BS because everything comes to an end. And what I've learned in life and entrepreneurial life is a lot of times that sneaks up on you. You think you're in a good spot and you're happy with what you're doing, but there's a lot of things that happen in business that are irritating and wear on you. And eventually one day you might just throw your hands up in the air and be like, I've had enough of this. And if you're in a better spot to sell and you've prepared yourself all along the way, that can happen a lot easier and smoother than if you haven't prepared. And you'll also get way more money for your business if you have prepared. So, it's something that you should be thinking about at all times. It will probably make you a better business person and make your existing business better anyway, because if you're always thinking about it from the perception of, I might need to sell this business at any time, it will force you to have better procedures in place. It will force you to be looking at your accounting every month and scrutinizing all of your expenses, making sure that your net profit's always as high as possible. There's a lot of ancillary benefits having that thought process. And even if you quote unquote, never do sell, it will probably make you put you in a better position no matter what. So, those are things that I wish that if I could go, you can't go back and change things. And I was thinking a lot about this. Our plan was to sell the whole thing as like a big conglomerate originally, but things change. And so I had been marching towards a sell everything as a conglomerate goal where everything was together and I thought one day everything, when I was done with e-commerce, I would just be done with e-commerce, but that's not how it worked out. You know, what ended up happening was we got too big for what I was comfortable with in terms of risk to reward. And I wanted to take some money off the table, and I still immensely love e-commerce and I want to be involved in e-commerce. So I could have better prepared ourselves for that by having multiple LLCs for each brand, that maybe one LLC like owned each one of those, and it still would have been that conglomerate thing and structured in a better way. You can't foresee the future all the time, but you can definitely plan to put yourself in a better position when the unexpected comes.
I don't know if I could have said it any better than that. So we're just going to wrap this up. Mike,
it's on hard drop, mic drop, boom.
It's been a complete pleasure working with you. Glad to have been your broker and helping you achieve these goals. And maybe in another year or two, we'll do it with the next one.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.